Most of Nietzsche's writings are distinguished by their passion, but many people have found a particular degree of passion in his writings about women. So what I'm going to discuss in this lecture is the way in which Nietzsche considers women. I think oftentimes the very well-known passages in which Nietzsche has made some comment about women have led to rather confused views about his attitudes. Probably, too, the fact that he's associated in the minds of many with Schopenhauer, and for good reason, has led to Schopenhauer's own rather notorious misogyny rubbing off on Nietzsche. Indeed, Schopenhauer has some almost libelous things to say about women. He calls women a short-legged, broad-hipped, undersized race, and refers to them as being like the sacred apes of Benares, convinced that they can get by with anything and everything. And even though Nietzsche, I think, likes Schopenhauer's cantankerous turn of phrase and doesn't even mind the fact that it's a bit extreme at times, nevertheless, his comments about women are not so aggressively hostile. And indeed, when looked at in context, I think are much more complicated than people have generally assumed. Before discussing particular passages, I should just point out once again that Nietzsche's own relationships to women were fairly complicated and probably had something to do with the way in which he tended to think about them. For example, as we've already mentioned a couple of times, I believe, Nietzsche grew up in a household of women and was well aware that that had some impact, at the very least, on his attitudes toward them. He comments, as I think I mentioned earlier, on the way in which a man's view of his mother often has something to do with his attitude toward women and his later relationships. So Nietzsche was well aware of that. In his own adult life, as Bob mentioned in the last lecture, Nietzsche wasn't particularly successful in his interactions with women. The one exception, and this was a fairly brief exception, being his relationship with Lou Salome. The unfortunate detail from Nietzsche's point of view was that, despite the fact that it was a kind of meeting of the minds between him and Lou, it was really a meeting of three minds. Nietzsche's, at that point, best friend, Paul Ray, was actually the person who introduced him to Lou, and Ray had considerable interest in Lou himself. For a while, actually a rather short while, the three thought about moving into a house together, living there platonically, and having grand philosophical discussions. However, that was a fairly short-lived ambition. It became even more obvious that this would never come to be as a result of Nietzsche's sister Elizabeth meddling as much as she possibly could in the relationship between Lou and her brother. She was not at all happy about the idea of Nietzsche spending more time with another woman besides herself, it seems, and she did everything she could to discourage Lou from any kind of romantic ambitions should she actually be entertaining them toward her brother. Ultimately, the entire threesome exploded when Ray and Lou Salome ran off together at a point where Nietzsche was expecting to meet them in a train station, and so one has this rather sorrowful picture of Nietzsche looking a little bit like Humphrey Bogart in Casablanca, reading the letter and discovering that his life has totally changed. I think this background helps us to understand quite a bit about what Nietzsche has to say about women, particularly his discussion of power dynamics in connection with relationships with women. And this, I think, will be something that will keep coming up, so I'll defer that for the moment. One of the passages in which Nietzsche is sometimes seen as a sexist is, I think, a fairly innocuous one, but nevertheless occurs at a rather salient point in his writings. It actually opens up the book Beyond Good and Evil. Supposing truth is a woman, what then? It took me a while to see why some people actually thought of this as sexist, aside from the fact that a woman is mentioned. One of the things that I think it should be kept in mind in reading the passage is that in German, the word for truth is die Wahrheit, in other words, a feminine noun. And Nietzsche is at least playing with the language by saying, you write as though truth is a woman. Have you ever thought about treating truth as a woman? I think what people who see this as sexist have in mind is that the idea of treating someone as a woman has a lot of loaded implications. And indeed, I think Nietzsche is playing on these. There is a kind of notion that women tend to be people that you can't, if you're a man, expect to be saying exactly what they think. they view things indirectly, and you need to approach them indirectly. It's not going to be a situation where you can trust that a woman is like a man. Indeed, often there's the question, why isn't a woman more like a man? Nietzsche is playing on all of that, and certainly not questioning the desirability of those attitudes. But what he's suggesting is that in approaching truth, why should there be the assumption that truth is going to submit to inquiry any more than a woman is going to submit to someone indicating some intention? In other words, perhaps truth, like women in the traditional story, is going to be somewhat reticent and only be willing to actually, in a sense, give herself this woman truth, in much the same circumstances that a woman would be willing to. Too often, male philosophers have been inept in courtship. They haven't considered that truth might want to be wooed like a woman. That, at least, is Nietzsche's point here. Some of Nietzsche's later passages in Beyond Good and Evil, I think, have more basis to support the charge that Nietzsche is sexist. And these, I think, deserve a certain amount of commentary. What I'd like to point out in a certain span late in the book where Nietzsche talks about women for several sections is that he prefaces the whole thing with what I think is really a remarkable disclaimer. Whenever a cardinal problem is at stake, he writes, there speaks an unchangeable, this is I. About man and woman, for example, a thinker cannot relearn, but only finish learning, only discover ultimately how this is settled in him. After this abundant civility that I have just evidenced in relation to myself, I shall perhaps be permitted more readily to state a few truths about woman as such, assuming that it is now known from the outset how very much these are, after all, only my truths. I think this is remarkable because it suggests that what Nietzsche is going to be saying has the status of something like consciousness raising, a kind of confession on his part, and an awareness that this might not have anything to do with objective reality, certainly not likely to have much to do with reality as it might look to any individual woman. The fact that he uses the expression woman as such here is also quite interesting. Maud Marie Clark has pointed out that in German, this is a kind of analog to the notion of thing in itself. We have the notion of woman in the abstract, and that is quite different, as Nietzsche's grammar makes very clear, from any claim about how women in general do behave or actually think about things. It's pretty clearly a male projection. Not only that, it brings up the whole notion of the eternal feminine, a notion that is a kind of buzzword for the era, thanks to Goethe using it in Faust. However, its connotations have something to do more with the kind of ideal of women in Nietzsche's particular cultural milieu. People would use the buzzword not to refer to Goethe's rather interesting use of the expression, but more to refer to ideals for women that Nietzsche finds really pretty appalling. Ideals of being self-righteous and rather prudish and rather smug in one's opinions, if not particularly forthcoming. Nietzsche actually hoped to discourage that kind of mode of behavior and to discourage the idea that this was any kind of ideal for women or anyone else. So his use of the expression woman as such resonates with that as well. He goes on and targets feminism as a collective movement. And I think this is a kind of extended passage from which I'll quote some that feminists of this era would quite reasonably take offense. Feminists of his era, I think, reasonably should have as well. Woman wants to become self-reliant, he says. And for that reason, she is beginning to enlighten men about woman as such. This is one of the worst developments of the general uglification of Europe. For what must these clumsy attempts of women at scientific self-exposure bring to light? Woe when woman begins to unlearn thoroughly and on principle her prudence and her art, of grace, of play, of chasing away worries, of lightening burdens and taking things lightly. Whatever women write about woman, we may in the end reserve a healthy suspicion whether woman really wants enlightenment about herself, whether she can will it. Unless woman seeks a new adornment for herself that way, she surely wants to inspire fear of herself. I think it is a real friend of women that counsels them today, women should be silent about women. Now, in this passage, Nietzsche is clearly being quite critical of the way he thinks his contemporaries who are feminists approach the whole issue of relations between men and women. And part of what he objects to seems to be the whole idea of women taking a role in the general kind of mass culture that he sees men of his time being part of. His idea that women imitating men would not be a kind of step in the right direction, I think, is one that a feminist might actually hold herself, even at his time. Nietzsche uses the expression woman as clerk as a kind of indication of the way in which he thinks women wanting to join the workplace suggests that women, too, will join this kind of clumsy crew of basically conformist men who have jobs that are much like jobs other people have, and that he doesn't see as particularly desirable for women in the least. What he focuses on in what I read is really the idea that women want to debunk some of the fantasies that men have had about themselves. And this, I think, Nietzsche questions. He questions, for instance, whether the idea of what he seems to see as asserting demands on the basis of the scientific fact of human equality or human beings possessing the same basic abilities, that this might be an approach that women are tempted to use, but it's certainly not a very persuasive approach. Indeed, traditionally, women who felt it important to flirt and to be very cautious in what they revealed about themselves, he thinks had it better in that they knew how to be persuasive. And the idea of simply debunking the idea that women are different from men strikes him as a mistake. He also suggests that a danger for all women involved in this kind of movement is that they're going to give control to consciousness for what is better organized by instinct. I think what he has in mind here is that there's a kind of move to rational discussion and making demands that sound very reasonable and attempting to organize interactions between men and women on that basis, when he thinks that unconscious factors have a lot more to do with the success of these matters. Perhaps saying less is more effective in many contexts. And the idea of feminists, in a sense, giving almost a kind of scientific lecture about what women are really like, he thinks is going to have only counterproductive effects. Certainly, he thinks the kind of careerism that he sees growing in his time, I can only imagine what he'd say about ours, is something that he thinks women shouldn't want any part of. The idea of obsessing about status for women, he thinks, is just, again, buying into a game that men have only been harmed by and something they should try to avoid. Now, I'll grant there are many things in this set of passages that I think most feminists should object to. Nietzsche does seem to have somewhat clear ideas about women having a different societal role than men do. But I will add that in other contexts, he talks a lot about the possibility of change in this regard. In the Gay Science, for instance, there's a similar stream of several passages on women where he makes a point of suggesting that he thinks that women's education is really barbarous because it keeps them ignorant, certainly about erotic reality, and indeed sets up certain ideals on the basis of what men want or think they want that are very problematic for women. So I think that he is a lot more sensitive to the way this might look from the inside and indeed actually asks his male readers to try to sympathize with the point of view of women. But in these passages, what he's attacking, I think, is what he sees as the general tone and approach that the feminist movement of his time is taking, one that he thinks is really not going to serve even their own purposes. Probably the most famous context in which Nietzsche talks about women is actually Thus Spoke Zarathustra, although rarely are the passages quoted from it admitted to be from that book. This is important because what that means is that in almost every case, these quotes are statements by particular characters, not directly statements of Nietzsche himself. I'll mention a couple that are made by Zarathustra because I think they suggest some importance regarding the character, although these might be statements that Nietzsche would stand behind if asked to comment directly. One of these is, The happiness of man is I will. The happiness of woman is he wills. The fact that this is said by Zarathustra is, I think, important. The context is one in which Zarathustra is talking about his own views of the ideal relationship between men and women. So that context already suggests that this is a kind of ideal of Zarathustra. We're not certain whether to extend this beyond that or to view this as something proposed as an ideal for anyone but Zarathustra. I'll say more about the framing that might raise questions about this in a moment. Also, this does seem to resemble what Nietzsche says elsewhere and therefore might be seen as a kind of view Nietzsche would support. But I'd like to point out that what this seems to be is a kind of description rather than a prescription. In other words, Zarathustra here seems to be making a statement about what he's observed of men and women, that men are very active and assertive in the world, whereas women seem quite happy with a secondary role. One question to ask, of course, given Nietzsche's other comments suggesting that one needs to consider the viewpoint of women from the inside, is whether he would consider this to be something women would be happy about. Nevertheless, he does seem to think there is a certain amount of social accuracy about this. He does think that men are not very happy simply with a woman that they're attached to asserting themselves in the world in a certain way, whereas women at least seem at times to do so. So he is making a comment about what seems to be the social reality for his time. It's still left in completely unclear at this point whether or not he would say this is how it should be, and since other passages suggest he thinks changes should be made, we're not entirely certain about it. Another rather similar comment, man is for woman a means, the end is always the child. This actually has a little more currency for him and his time than it would for ours, partly because medicine believed that there was something like a drive to have children at his time that was actually being pushed rather hard as a theme. And women and men generally tended to accept this if they knew the findings of recent medicine. In a sense, he's simply quoting that or pointing out that that seems to be the way it looks. Again, we don't know whether this is something Nietzsche wants to defend or simply something that he accepts as true. I think it's rather interesting in the case of this particular comment, though, that this is a view that Freud actually picks up on when he talks about how satisfaction often seems to be imbalanced within the family, so that a woman is actually looking forward to having a child, particularly a son, and that does tend to, in a sense, take a certain amount of attention away from the husband, which creates a certain amount of conflict. In other words, Nietzsche does seem to be pointing to something that psychology has since tended to reinforce. Again, that doesn't mean it's true, but it does mean that this isn't an entirely perverse or unusual viewpoint, even if one might want to reject it. The most problematic passage in this same general section of Zarathustra is one that isn't stated by Zarathustra at all, but instead by a character who approaches Zarathustra, an old woman, we might even say an old wife with her own tales, who concludes a conversation with Zarathustra, this very one in which he's talking about men and women, by saying, wonderful, you've said such good things about women, now I'd like to give you something. And the something she gives him is the comment, you are going to women, don't forget the whip. Now the fact that this is often viewed as Nietzsche's statement and not the view of one of his characters strikes me as outrageous. One would not say that Alice Walker endorses wife beating because one of her characters encourages it, but people consistently refer to this as a view that Nietzsche holds. And I think that's far from obvious. In fact, it isn't even a view that Zarathustra seems to hold. It's framed in a very complicated way in this passage. The passage opens, actually, when Zarathustra encounters yet another character who notices that he seems to be holding something under his coat. And he says, yes, indeed, I am. And he describes it as a child that's been given to him by the old woman, presumably. And he comments, it is troublesome like a young child, and if I don't hold my hand over its mouth, it will cry over loudly. presumably, if you consider what this line is that is going to cry over loudly, even Zarathustra seems to think that this is something one shouldn't allow too much expression in one's world. So I think that's a kind of factor that needs to be taken into account. But what does this statement actually mean in the mouth of the woman? Well, I think at the very least what's being suggested is that Zarathustra is given this wonderful speech about his ideals about men and women and how they ought to interact. And what he's completely left out is the fact that it's not clear that women are going to buy this. This whole scenario is entirely a fantasy of one. He hasn't really dealt with the fact that this is only going to happen if a woman also wills this as well as him. And the old woman's image suggests at the very least that you're not just going to easily get women to buy this. You probably have to coerce someone to accept this, or at least you can't be sure that you're going to find someone who agrees with you on this point. It does seem a kind of sadomasochistic image, but I think that what this, again, points out is that power dynamics are at work here. And compliance is something that is going to depend on the fact that there are two wills involved, not a single one. Another aspect of this passage that I think is important and not much noticed is that it's an allusion to earlier literature. As so often, I think Nietzsche is once again alluding to Plato. In this case, he's alluding, I think, to Plato's Symposium, specifically the context in which Socrates talks about love. And very oddly, for any of Plato's dialogues, Socrates claims that he actually isn't speaking his own mind, but describing truths about love that he learned from a woman named Diotima, who is a priestess. What that means is that he's learned what he knows about love through a woman that is presented as, in a sense, sexually unavailable or asexual. And from that point of view, she has a better outlook. The old woman is a kind of crone or a caricature of a sexless woman who seems to know quite a bit, precisely because she's not sexually available to Zarathustra. But Diotima has this kind of allure as this amazingly wise, unavailable woman, whereas the old woman is unavailable in part because nobody particularly wants her. So there's a kind of asymmetry there, even while the setup is rather similar. Diotima's view of love, which Socrates buys and continues to defend, is that love is a matter of seeing a kind of form, beauty itself, through the individual. Certainly the body is something that is dispensable in all this. As Bob was noting in the previous lecture, there's an idea that it's really only a very immature person that would view love as having much to do with that at all. By contrast, the old woman's vision is almost exactly the opposite. Zarathustra is the one who's too idealistic, who's, in a sense, pie in the sky is what he's preaching, whereas in the case of reality, from her point of view, it's really power dynamics, actually getting someone to occupy the same place. Something more like physical coercion is something that you need to take into account. And so this image that Zarathustra has kind of come up with from nowhere, seemingly not from real experience, is something that she's trying to diffuse. Again, Diotima is promoting a very idealistic vision of love. And what the old woman is trying to do is debunk Zarathustra's sort of self-manufactured ideals. Diotima's vision of what love is about is kind of communing with atemporal beauty. Atemporal beauty, once again, being something that indicates that the body is unimportant. Since bodies change and ultimately deteriorate, what love has to do with isn't that at all, but it's this form of beauty itself. It has nothing to do with the individual, for that matter. It's the form. What the old woman is pointing out is, you've left out these things. You've left out the fact that people change, that people have individual personalities, and that they don't just fit these abstract schemas unless you coerce them. So she's really pointing out that women themselves are willful. And I think that it's not very clear that one should interpret this as sexist. One might say that Nietzsche, along with Sartre, overdoes the point a bit, suggesting that power is maybe more important in dynamics of those in love than someone else might say. I rather hope so, I'll have to admit. But nevertheless, this idea that the comment is an indication that Nietzsche views love as a purely sadomasochistic matter and that men ought to dominate women, I think, is far from clear. Beyond that, the whip comes back again later in the book in another context that makes it very clear that there's a kind of erotic interplay going on. Zarathustra confronts a woman, in this case, life, and suggests that, you know, he hasn't forgotten his whip. And life, it manages to get him to put it aside almost immediately. Don't crack that whip. You know, that kills thought. It's too noisy. And he's quite willing to do that. Again, this kind of notion of an idea that he has about how things ought to be being completely undone by the actual situation is what Nietzsche's point in Zarathustra seems to be. In other words, you can't just have these kind of schemas in your own mind about what love is going to be and expect the world to comply with it. For that matter, you can't even expect your own behavior to comply with these ideals. What I'd like to finish with is to kind of point out that Nietzsche's view of women often concurs with certain themes in contemporary feminism, I think rather surprisingly. For example, one of the points that is fundamental to Nietzsche's work throughout is that people have different perspectives. He extends this to perspectives that are different because one person is a man and another a woman, having been brought up in a particular society. So perspectivism, which I think underlies modern feminism, is something that Nietzsche has in common with contemporary feminists. He also seems concerned to change consciousness in a certain way. When he provides the kind of vignettes that he does in The Gay Science that suggests that women have a very different view of themselves in particular standard contexts, or a different view of themselves because of the way they've been educated, a way that's somewhat different from the way men have been educated, he's suggesting this could change and indeed in some way should change. He also seems to question the ideal of a kind of unisex way of being. And while some feminists, certainly earlier feminists in this century, might have thought that not to be such a good point, certainly within the feminist movement itself, there have been enough people who have questioned the ideal of androgyny or a unisex reality. So I think Nietzsche's actually engaging in a kind of debate that really only comes up again later on after feminists have developed their thought enough to be debating certain subpoints. Certainly, Nietzsche wants to suggest that women aren't mere pawns of men. I think the passages from Zarathustra make it abundantly clear that he thinks there has to be a kind of reciprocity, and indeed, while there might be a kind of dynamic tension going on, that's exactly what you should respect if you take both parties seriously. He thinks women shouldn't be more like men. I think that's pretty clear and consistent. He also brings up the rather interesting distinction between sex and gender. Although he does think that women perhaps are biologically more equipped to have certain states of mind or orientations than men because of their biological differences, he doesn't seem to think that that accounts for the ways in which men and women have been taught to think differently. And he does suggest that this kind of distinction can be used to assess where we should go from here, perhaps to change it fairly radically. He grants that women do have a different perspective, but he doesn't leave it at that. He talks about types of women, so he doesn't suggest that all women tend to look at things in this way and all men this way. But instead, part of his discussion of gender is to try to amplify on the way in which individuals do have different perspectives, and certainly gender is a factor. Finally, he makes it abundantly clear, too, that male fantasies are one thing and intersubjective reality another. Although he seems to be well aware and perhaps more conscious than many of his contemporaries of some of the lines of male fantasies, he does not assume that women are automatically going to buy this as the real world or the way things ought to be, but instead acknowledges that for men to actually find women who agree with these fantasies, they may have to exert their will considerably, because it isn't at all obvious that women think this way. In summation, I think it's pretty clear that reading Nietzsche about women is not nearly the kind of easy matter that people have often taken it to be. And I think his works need to be compared and various contexts compared in order to make any kind of fundamental sense of it. At the very least, his perspectivism, I think, overrides everything, and he wants to get far beyond the idea of talking about woman as such. Thank you.